Welcome to WTF, Women Talk Finance. We believe women don't talk enough about money and finance. Certainly not as much as men do. We wanted to change that, and the WTF Women Talk Finance podcast was born.
We discuss all types of capital, whether it's financial capital, social capital, or emotional capital. The WTF podcast is where people talk about their personal journey, their career paths, lessons learned, as well as their inspirations. Thank you for listening.
Okay, this is going to be amazing.
Yes.
We're switching it up today. We're doing like a little offshoot of Women Talk Finance. Today we're doing WTF subscript C, Women Talk Financial Crimes.
Yeah.
This is going to be juicy. I'm going to surprise you with my financial crime that I've researched.
And then, I'm surprising you
yeah.
as well. But I think first we need to acknowledge, will we dress the parts today for this financial crime?
I could have shown up in a garbage bag. Nothing compares to the shirt you're wearing. If you're not wearing a JTT shirt, what are you doing here? God, and he's got a puppy in one.
A puppy and a kitten.
And a kitten in the other.
And a kitten. Yeah. But nobody can see my
amazing. God, it's glorious.
Oh, man.
Glorious. Oh. It's going to take me a minute to recover from
it's
that.
Gonna,
but okay, here's my financial crime. Mark Stewart Dreyer. He's an American lawyer, former lawyer, definitely disbarred, who was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison for committing investment fraud using a Ponzi scheme. He's set to be released in 2025.
I was just going to ask, is Marky Mark still there?
He's coming out soon.
Okay.
What's so mind-blowing about this? Well, first of all, I personally, I love when lawyers don't follow the rules. Listen and find out. So these notes are from CBS News. 60 Minutes did a fantastic story on him. And he agreed to be interviewed, which is...
From prison?
I believe so. I believe he was in prison at the time that it happened. But here's what's so striking about this. If it hadn't been for Bernie Madoff, the most famous white-collar criminal in America, would probably be Mark Dreyer. If that name's not ringing a bell, it's because his $400 million Ponzi scheme was blown off the front pages by Madoff's arrest just a few days later. So really, no one has heard about Mark Dreyer. I shouldn't say no one. I hadn't heard about Mark Dreyer because Madoff was so front and center. But this case is no less fascinating. He was a respected attorney who ran a big Park Avenue law firm. He was arrested in Toronto for impersonating an officer in a pension fund, which is a common theme for him. He was really big on impersonating other people.
Being a lawyer wasn't enough?
Right. And so this is perhaps the most bizarre arrest in the history of white collar crime. But unlike Bernie Madoff, Mark agreed to talk to 60 Minutes and they flat out asked him, is this the way you wanted to be on 60 Minutes? And he said, no, because success was a big deal for him.
Yeah.
And he said...
Not in the jumpsuit is like the preferred
not
way
what
to,
I figured,
to be on 60
figured
Minutes.
I figured I'd be on 60
yeah.
Minutes for doing something amazing. To your question, when 60 Minutes interviewed him, he was a prisoner in his own penthouse, not in a prison. And then at the time, he must have been out on bail, but with an ankle bracelet. That had a GPS monitoring device, and he was detained by private jailers whose $70,000 a month fee was paid before by his 88-year-old mother.
That's a nice mom.
That's a really nice mom. With his assets frozen or confiscated by the court, all that remained of his $40 million art collection were the hooks on the walls. Everything else had been taken. And 60 Minutes asked him, how'd you end up becoming a crook? And he said, I can't remember the moment I did something or that I decided to do something that was wrong, but I had an ambition that I needed to feed. I fell into the trap of wanting to be more successful than I was. I really wanted to distinguish myself. I wanted to be as important as I thought I was and important as I deserved to be. So huge, huge psychological
yeah.
study there. He did have degrees from Yale and Harvard. He was successful by several measures. He also had the ego of a successful trial lawyer. And he had started telling friends that he was going to be a billionaire. Just walking around saying it. And it's like, well, got to hold to that, right? You told
Manifest
people you're going to be
that.
You told people you're going to be a billionaire. So he started his own law firm that would revolutionize the business of law. He planned to hire the best attorneys, pay them top dollar, and keep all the profits for himself as the firm's only partner. And he says, my idea for the law firm was really viable. sticking to that. But it needed more money to get off the ground than I anticipated. Off the ground.
So it never left? It never left the ground?
He said, I had a good idea, but a very bad business plan. The bad business plan was approaching hedge funds with a scheme, letting them know he was a billionaire real estate developer who was just looking to borrow hundreds of millions of dollars to embark on some new projects. The developer, again, him, so he's impersonating someone else for the first time. The developer would issue short-term promissory notes guaranteeing interest rates of between 7 and 12. Red flag.
Ooh,
can't get
that G word.
Yep. And it seemed like a very good deal. The only problem was this guy who was supposed to be borrowing all this money, there was an actual person that he was impersonating, didn't know anything about it. So he didn't make up a fake persona. He just took somebody else's and impersonated him. And so, oh, nor did he know that Dreyer, this guy, which was his former lawyer, so he impersonated a former client, was fabricating financial information about his company and keeping all the loan proceeds for himself. So naturally, this turned into a Ponzi scheme. He's out there selling these fake promissory notes. The numbers vary. At some point, you see it was a $700 million Ponzi scheme. Another article said it was a $980 million Ponzi scheme. Big threads of impersonating other people, walking out there just trying to make it, right? Like just going after the success I deserve.
And no real assets.
No real assets. Yikes. He did run a law firm, a law practice. So that was a legitimate business. He provided legal services. That was
it
real.
Got off the ground.
That was real.
Hovering.
As the financial crisis set in 2008, when a lot of that stuff came to the surface, he was holding hundreds of million dollars in loans that were about to come due, and everyone wanted their money back. It was gone. He had multiple houses. He had a nice yacht with a staff of 10. He had multiple cars. Who knows where else he spent it? Maybe on his law firm. But the day that 60 Minutes went to his law firm, all the firm's furniture and office equipment was being sold off by the court to pay off the creditors, mostly hedge funds and their investors, who are not likely to see much of the missing $400 million. So that remains a mystery for me. I have to do some more research. I want to know, how do you spend that much money?
I do always wonder that. How do you spend that much money in such a short period of time?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer. But yes. Also, the most fascinating thing to me about this guy is that, I don't know, he's not a household name to me. I didn't, because Madoff was so huge, this guy's massive, in some instances, closing in on a $1 billion Ponzi scheme, just kind of went to the side.
Talk about that timing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my juicy financial crime.
Ooh.
Mark Dreyer.
Oh, well.
Former attorney.
Former attorney. Yeah, that is crazy. Because, I mean, he really did have everything going for him.
Degrees from Yale and Harvard.
Yeah. You're going to be okay.
Make it work.
You're going to make
it work.
You're going to be okay.
You're a hard worker.
You don't have to lie. Wow. Okay. Are you ready for a sticky tale?
I think so.
Okay.
Gross.
So... It is gross. Not that kind of sticky tail. Goodness. Okay, so I saw this on Dirty Money. And when we decided to do this, I was like, I need to find that story because I remember it being so crazy. So I'm going to try to do it justice here. So anybody who has not heard of this, it is the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist. Have you never heard of it?
No.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. I really wanted to surprise y'all.
You did.
Yay. Okay. We're gonna travel mentally to the beautiful Quebec, Canada.
French-speaking Quebec.
Yes. It is like the maple syrup capital. And we have Richard, our unlikely criminal mastermind of this maple syrup heist. And I think the numbers surprised me, okay? So this is wild. So Quebec, syrup capital of the world. Okay. Syrup, the syrup industry.
Big money.
It is run by a top secret syrup mafia.
No.
Yes, it is. Isn't that crazy? I hope a bunch of Canadians don't hate me for this. Yeah, there's these like syrup bigwigs and they control syrup production for like all of us, okay? And they determine price. They determine availability. And they keep this stash of syrup the way they control the prices.
In underground bunkers?
In warehouses. Yes. This is a whole thing. You're not in this. You wouldn't know because you're not in the syrup mafia. Okay. So we've got Richard. Okay. And he is a blue collar worker in the syrup industry. Okay. And just everyday guy, regular Joe with a sweet tooth for crime.
Is that your line or do you need to give credit right now?
I don't actually know where it came from, but it made me laugh. I have a sweet tooth, but not for crime. I'm way too much of a rule follower. Okay, so little did anyone suspect that this man was such a, you know, a syrup savant. So with his inside knowledge of how the syrup industry works, he had a plan to really basically screw over this syrup mafia.
Bold.
I know.
Single-handedly thinking you can take down a mafia.
I mean, I think he has a crew. He's got a band of mischiefs here. So over several months, these syrup saboteurs embarked on a mission and they siphoned off syrup from barrels and refilled them with water, just water. And the syrup mafia had no idea. They've been stealing syrup and then selling it on the black market. There's a syrup black market, which I also did not know. Did not know this. And I really wish I did. Every good crime story needs a twist, right? Well, here is where our hoser gets hosed. Okay. There is someone in his ranks. Insider turned informant.
No.
Richard has a double agent on his hands.
But he has no idea.
He has no idea. There's a whistleblower.
Informing to who?
The syrup authorities.
Yes,
obviously.
Naturally. Okay.
So the total value of all of this, $18 million.
In stolen syrup?
In stolen syrup.
Hidden where?
Everywhere. Barns, warehouses, his yard. His backyard.
Like he dug holes and
buried barrels
of stolen syrup.
Yes, that's a lot of toonies and loonies in.
That's a lot of stolen syrup.
So much stolen syrup.
This is prompting new career path ideas. I would love to be on the team that goes in and like, we got your syrup.
Raids a syrup. And like, hands up.
You're now responsible for like taking possession of the syrup and digging it up. And you know, where do you store it? How do you unload it?
The syrup.
Yeah. That, mm-hmm. I would be interested in mm-hmm. knowing who's on that team. Delicious financial crime, Candace.
Yes. Tasty morsels for our financial crime.
This was super fun. I love taking the financial crimes twist. For our listeners, if you'd like us to do more of these episodes, send us some tips. Send us any kind of off the beaten path financial crimes that we might not be aware of. We'll do a little more research and come back with additional episodes and stories about some really great financial crimes.
Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. Please hit that subscribe button so you can stay up to date with the WTF Women Talk Finance podcast.
Email us with questions, suggestions, or just say hi.
Again, thank you for listening to WTF Women Talk Finance podcast.